WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The film Memento is one of the biggest independent hits of the year. It opened last winter and is still playing in many theaters. The film cost $5 million to produce and has grossed around $25 million. It comes out on video and DVD September 4th. Christopher Nolan wrote and directed Memento. We spoke when the movie opened last winter. Memento is a thriller whose real subject is memory and identity. It stars Guy Pearce as Leonard Shelby, a man with a rare form of amnesia. He's been unable to make new memories ever since he was struck on the head while his wife was raped and murdered. He's obsessed with finding the murderer and getting revenge, but how do you keep track of the clues you uncover? How can you even be sure what you're doing if you have no memory? In his pursuit of the killer, Leonard has moved into a cheap motel. Here he is talking with the desk clerk.
I'm Mr. Shelby from 304.
All right, what can I do for you, Leonard?
Bert, I'm not sure. I think I may have asked you to hold my calls.
You don't know?
Well, I think I may have. I'm not too good on the phone.
Right, you said you like to look people in the eye when you talk to them.
Yeah.
You don't remember saying that.
Well, that's the thing. I have this condition.
A condition?
It's my memory.
Amnesia?
No. It's different from that. I have no short-term memory. I know who I am. I know all about myself. Since my injury, I can't make new memories. Everything fades. If we talk for too long, I'll forget how we started. And next time I see you, I'm not going to remember this conversation. I don't even know if I've met you before. So if I seem a little strange or rude or something, I've told you this before, haven't I?
Yeah, I don't mean to mess with you, but it's so weird. You don't remember me at all.
No.
We've talked a bunch of times.
I'm sure we have, yeah.
Well, what's the last thing you remember?
My wife.
Well, what's it like?
It's like waking. It's like he just woke up.
For his work on Memento, Christopher Nolan was named British Screenwriter of the Year by the London Film Critics Circle. He based his screenplay on a story by his brother Jonathan. This is Nolan's second film. His first, Following, played film festivals and got limited distribution in the States. Christopher Nolan, welcome to Fresh Air. I'd like you to describe Leonard's memory disorder in Memento.
Leonard's memory disorder in Memento, it's anterior grade memory loss. It's a form of amnesia whereby you can't make new memories. You know everything about yourself. You know all the supposedly objective information about, you know, who you were and, you know, your name and who you grew up with and who you were married to and where you lived and all this stuff. Up until a particular point where through, in his case, some kind of trauma, you know, blow to the head, he's lost the ability to make new memories. So he's been sort of cut adrift in a sense in time, because he's lost his sense of time passing, and in space, because he doesn't know where he is, because he doesn't know how he's got someplace.
I think what I like most about the film is that Leonard is just a more extreme version of how I live my life. Like, I tell friends things several times, forgetting that I've already told them. My memory is often so unreliable. I write notes to myself. I email myself. I leave phone messages for myself. Leonard actually tattoos his body with lists of facts that he has to remember. Things like, find him and kill him.
Well, that was exactly my interest in the condition. I mean, the screenplay was based on a short story that my younger brother was writing. And basically, what fascinated me about the condition and about then writing the screenplay from it is that I saw him not as a freak. You know, I wasn't interested in making any kind of medical drama. I saw an interesting jumping-off point for an exaggeration of the process by which we all live. You know, the process of memory, the process of taking present tense information and passing it into the long-term memory. I saw a very interesting jumping off point for an examination of that process and how fragile and inefficient it is. And as I wrote the script, I simply exaggerated the way I live my life. You know, I tend to keep the same things in the same pockets, so I don't have to think about, you know, where I've put my house keys or my glasses and so forth. And I became sort of fascinated by the idea that if I were to tell you a string of 12 numbers right now, you know, 30 seconds later, you probably wouldn't be able to recite it back to me. Once you start looking at it in that detail, it becomes a little bit frightening.
Describe some of the devices you've given Leonard to help him remember what he's just experienced and what he's just learned.
Well, the most visual device, obviously, is the tattoos, which he uses his body to record essential information, clues about the guy who killed his wife, because he's looking for the guy who killed his wife. He's looking for revenge. The more everyday things are, he uses a Polaroid camera. He carries one with him at all times, and he snaps Polaroids of the car he drives, the place he's staying, and the people he's encountering, and he writes notes to himself about these people on the backs of these pictures, and he has a sort of chart on his wall where he sticks this information when he's done with it, you know, when he comes back to his hotel room and so forth. So these are the kind of devices he uses, but the main one actually is that some people miss when they're watching the film, funnily enough, is a form of sort of behavior modification called conditioning, which is where you sort of use a different part of the brain to try and retain information. It's your sort of muscle memory. And what you do is you pattern your behavior and you use habit and routine to systematize your behavior to the extent that you stop having to use your conscious mind to operate.
I want to play another scene from the film, and this scene is really about how we're defined by memory. And this scene is Guy Pearce and Joe Pantoliano.
What about John G? You think he's still here?
Who?
Johnny G, the guy you're looking for. I mean, that's why you haven't left town, am I right?
Maybe.
Leonard, look, you have to be very careful.
Why?
The other day you mentioned that maybe somebody was trying to set you up, get you to kill the wrong guy.
Oh, well, I go on facts, not recommendations, but thank you.
Lenny, you can't trust a man's life to your little notes and pictures.
Why not?
Because your notes could be unreliable.
Memory's unreliable.
Ah, please.
No, really. Memory's not perfect. It's not even that good. Ask the police. Eyewitness testimony is unreliable. The cops don't catch a killer by sitting around remembering stuff.
Right.
They collect facts.
That's not what I'm saying.
They make notes and they draw conclusions. Facts, not memories. That's how you investigate. I know. It's what I used to do. Look, memory can change the shape of a room. It can change the color of a car. And memories can be distorted. They're just an interpretation. They're not a record. And they're irrelevant if you have the facts.
You really want to get this guy, don't you?
Killed my wife. He took away my memory. He destroyed my ability to live.
That's a scene from Memento. My guest, Christopher Nolan, wrote and directed the movie. Can you talk about how you connect memory and identity in the film?
Well, for me, when my brother Jonah, when he told me this story or this idea for a story that he was working on, what he pointed out to me and I immediately responded to is that it's not an amnesia story. And the reason that was sort of interesting to us is because amnesia stories have no rules in a sense. If you wipe out the identity of the character by wiping out his long-term memory, you then can make this character anybody, you know, you want to. It becomes a very easy device in the story. I mean, there have been some great amnesia thrillers, but I mean, what we were drawn to with this condition is that you know all of the information that you're supposed to be able to use to identify yourself. You know your name, your social security number, who you were married to, where you went to school, where you lived, all this stuff. Up to this point, you know, in Leonard's case, relatively, you know, late in his development, if you like, when he's lost the ability to make new memories. So the question of identity is sort of boiled down not to this, it's not this wider question of who am I? I could be anybody. It's to me a more relevant question, certainly relevant to me approaching the age of 30 as I was when I made it. This question of who am I now and how does that relate to who I was 10 years ago? You know, how did I get here sort of thing. To us, that was a much more interesting identity question. And, you know, there's certainly, you know, an element of, I don't know, satire, if you like, in the way that, you know, Leonard's primary identifiers are, you know, the clothes he wears and the cars he drives. And, you know, that was kind of interesting to us as a device as well.
I think I understand why you were so intrigued by the idea of a revenge story about somebody with memory loss. I mean, crime films are often about someone obsessed with seeking revenge for having been double-crossed in the past, or revenge for a loved one who was murdered. So it's the memory of this double-cross or this crime that leads to obsession mm-hmm. with revenge. And of course, the paradox here is that, you know, your character's memory of his wife's murder leads to his obsession with revenge, and yet he's lost all subsequent memory.
Yes, and so, you know, and this was Jonah's fascination with the material, and it certainly played right into the movie, is he's trapped in the moment of the aftermath of this trauma. As he says at one point in the film, you know, how can you heal if you can't feel time? He can't feel time passing because he's lost the ability to process information. So he's not aware of how long it is since his wife was killed and so forth. And that seemed a very, very tragic, but very extraordinary situation for a character, that he'd be stuck in this moment of grief and anger.
One of the characters says to Leonard, who's so obsessed with revenge, even if you get revenge, you won't remember. Your movie is not only about memory. Your movie relies on the audience's memory, which it needs to follow a pretty complicated plot.
Well, it's actually a very, very simple plot. But the notion is to tell it in such a way that you have to view it the way Leonard views it. And to Leonard, even a relatively simple story such as makes a memento becomes incredibly complicated, viewed the way he has to view it and pieced together the way he has to piece it together.
Why don't you describe the structure of the narrative, how everything happens in reverse?
Yeah, the film is structured pretty much literally in reverse. We begin with the end of the story, if you like, or the end of the chronological sequence, and then each subsequent scene is a flashback further in time from the previous scene. So we jump further and further back in time. And this material is all in color. And then between these color sequences, we have these little black and white scenes coming in that actually run forwards in time, as you sort of learn in the film. And they provide more objective information about the sky. They kind of show Leonard from more of a bird's eye view, more of a kind of documentary view of him. And these kind of separate the subsequent flashbacks further and further in time, and also give us a little more information about the character we're looking at.
Now, you mentioned the black and white scenes versus the color scenes and how the black and white go forward, whereas the color scenes go in reverse chronologically. It actually took me a while to notice that.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you wanted that to work on people consciously or subconsciously.
My ideal viewer, if you like, who's watching the film, kind of picks up on that, you know, some point in the second reel or third reel. But you know, I wanted to construct the film in such a way that you don't need to know that at all, and you can kind of figure that out, you know, an hour after you've left the film, or you know, if you're interested enough to see it a second time, sort of notice it a second time. So it's certainly not essential. What's essential is to realize that the color sequences are moving back in time. That helps orient, you know, the viewer as they watch it, so that it's not a random sequence of events, and it's not completely cyclical. There are kind of echoes and cycles within the film, but the overall thrust of it is backwards in time.
Let's talk about the casting. The lead in your movie, the man who has lost most of his memory but is seeking revenge for the murder of his wife, is Guy Pearce, who our listeners might remember as the kind of seemingly straight-laced by the book cop in L.A. Confidential, and he was also in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Did you ask for Guy Pearce, or did he come to you?
Well, both, really. It sort of worked out quite well, because what I was really looking for was an actor who would see the potential of, you know, what they could do with this character, and obviously an actor of extraordinary talent, because, you know, this is a character who's in every single scene of the movie. I mean, the story is entirely told from his point of view. And Guy was brought to my attention by the producers, and I had never really put together the actor from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert with the actor in L.A. Confidential. And once I took a look at those two films and saw this actor who could do both of these things, I thought, well, you know, any actor who can pull off both of those characters can do absolutely anything he sets his mind to. And we got the script to Guy, and when I met him, you know, he wanted to meet right away, which is always a good sign. And when I met him, it was very clear that he'd really connected with the material. He'd really connected with the character. This is a character who is constantly pretending that he knows what's going on when he doesn't. He's constantly feeling emotions that are carrying over from an experience that he can no longer remember. So he feels the emotion, but not the conscious reason behind it, not the narrative reason behind it, if you like. And I think Guy had seen a way of tapping into that, and What he also brought to the table was he's an incredibly logical, minded performer. He won't do anything that doesn't make sense to him. So he became an incredible logic filter on the material, because I was determined that the film should sustain the close scrutiny that its bizarre structure kind of invites. And he was very helpful in making sure that everything really holds together.
Christopher Nolan wrote and directed the thriller Memento. It comes out on video and DVD September 4th. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to the interview we recorded earlier this year with Christopher Nolan, the screenwriter and director of the independent film hit Memento. Why do you make movies? What do you love about watching movies and making them?
I think the various different things I love about it. I've always loved films. I started making films when I was 7 years old and kind of haven't stopped. And I've never really thought about doing anything else. What I love is films that create their own particular geography, their own particular world, and kind of immerse you in it for a couple hours. And I've always been a huge fan of Ridley Scott, and certainly when I was a kid, I mean, Alien and Blade Runner, I just blew me away because they just created these extraordinary worlds that were so terribly, you know, just completely immersive. I've also always been an enormous Stanley Kubrick fan for similar reasons. And then I think as I got older, I got more interested in films that I hadn't grown up with, the sort of cinema of people like Nicholas Roeg and Sidney Lumet and John Frankenheimer, people like that.
When you were making movies as a child, what were you making them about?
Well, I started off with my older brother Matt, sort of doing kind of war movies with, you know, action figures and all the rest. And then when I was about 7, Star Wars came out and kind of changed everything. And so everything I did after that was sort of little spaceships flying around and, you know, short films imaginatively titled Space Wars and things like that. But had a lot of fun doing that over the years. And actually the guys, I was living in Chicago at the time when I was 8 years old, and I made films with these two brothers, Rocco and Adrian Belich, and they made their first film just when I did their first feature film, when I made my first feature film following, and we were on the festival circuit together. It was a documentary they made called Genghis Blues that they actually wound up getting an Academy Award nomination for last year, which was a wonderful kind of serendipity that we kind of wound up, you know, going out there with our first films when we sort of made these little science fiction epics when we were kids.
Just one last question about memory, since that's really the subject of your movie Memento. Is there anything in your life that you really wish you could conjure up a full memory of, either visually or factually, that's just kind of been erased over the years and you can't grasp it much as you desperately want to?
Well, after writing the screenplay for Memento, I have to be honest, I actually feel that way about almost all my memories, because what I realized about myself, and I think it applies to other people as well, is that the process of creating long-term memories is very similar to the process of remembering a dream. And it's you wake up in the morning and you know, lie there in bed, and you can remember the dream, and you can remember it in a sensual sense. You can actually recreate the dream in your mind, but as you do that, you turn it into words, you turn it into language, both visual language and verbal language. And so it becomes a set of symbols in your long-term memory. You know, it's very much like the process of, as I say, remembering a dream and then trying to explain it to someone else. And then all you're left with really is the kind of symbolic representation of something you experienced. And after going through the process of making Memento, it seems increasingly true to me that other than these tiny little glimpses of sense memory to do with smell and particular, you know, visual references and all the rest, the tiny little details of a person that you remember, much of it is very elusive and very artificial.
Now, in the face of that knowledge, are you trying desperately to keep journals and to photograph things and sketch things so that you will have as accurate a memory as you're capable of keeping? Or do you just accept the fact that everything you experience is kind of fleeting in its own way and you can't really grasp it forever?
I've actually sort of accepted the fleeting nature a little bit and kind of done less of you know, the trying trying to remember things or trying to record things. Just before I made Memento, as an exercise, partly just to sort of keep myself visually in tune, I started taking a single photograph every day of my life. And I did this for about a year leading up to making Memento. And it was a photograph of anything, just a tiny little detail of something in my apartment or outside. And I was doing it for visual reasons. I wanted to discipline myself to take a single frame and create an interesting image with that, just taking one single frame every day. And, you know, I sort of put together this book of a tiny little visual detail for every day. And, you know, that was the process I was kind of going through in terms of while I was writing the screenplay and exploring memory. And since making the film and since kind of dealing with that in such detail, I've really kind of relaxed about that, and it's a long time since I actually took any pictures of anything. So unfortunately, all my experience now is just kind of getting lost as it happens. But, you know, that's fine.
Well, Christopher Nolan, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Christopher Nolan wrote and directed the film Memento. Our interview was recorded last March when Memento was released. It's still playing in many theaters and comes out on video and DVD September 4th. Nolan is making a new movie called Insomnia, starring Al Pacino and Hilary Swank. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.